Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive, and especially on Mondays. We have everything over the weekend to kind of talk about. I'll tell you, there was an extremely entertaining night of boxing on Saturday. And we talked about the Pacquiao-Thurman fight. That thing lived up to the billing. Even if you're not a diehard boxing fan, you would have enjoyed this fight. And I didn't agree with the announcers. I thought it was a lot closer than many ringside had it. And it turned out that, yes, it was a lot closer as Pacquiao picked up a split decision win. And by the way, what a remarkable accomplishment for him to become a title holder once again in the welterweight division at the age of 40 years old. I've never been a huge Pacquiao fan personally, but I've always respected what this man could bring to the sport. And Saturday night, he was phenomenal. The worst part about Saturday night for the sport of boxing was that everyone immediately started calling for a Mayweather-Pacquiao rematch. I don't want to see that. We don't need to see that. One hasn't fought he hasn't fought a legitimate boxer in 4 years. We don't need to see that. Pacquiao, you know what? Throw him in with Terrence Crawford or Errol Spence. Let's see what happens, because that guy is defying the hands of time. I will say this in regards to Mayweather. Everybody called Pacquiao as a washed fighter after the loss to Floyd, because Floyd was that good. He made Pacquiao look that average. Pacquiao still has something left in the tank, and that was just a highly entertaining fight. And even tip your hat to Keith Thurman, who picked up his first loss. I just thought it was a great night of boxing, hands down. Let's take a look at some of the headlines in the national sports front here on this Monday edition of the show, and we'll dive into the NBA. Tim Duncan has been named an assistant coach with the San Antonio Spurs. This just makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, it's a fundamental type move, right? He's returning to the San Antonio Spurs. He's going to join Greg Popovich's staff. The team made this announcement today. Here's the quote from Popovich. "It's only fitting that after I served loyally for 19 years as Tim Duncan's assistant, that he returns the favor." That's a classic Pop statement, isn't it? Tim Duncan's going to be back on the bench for the San Antonio Spurs. 43 years old, played his entire 19-year career with San Antonio. I believe he's got the right temperament to be a coach. And as far as the fundamentals go, yeah, absolutely. I love this right here. Now, this other move is something that somewhat shocked me a little bit. Sashi Brown. And for all the GM talk that we have between the NFL shows, I spent a lot of time talking about Sashi Brown. Because if you go back a couple of years ago, when he was the general manager for the Cleveland Browns, I thought Sashi did a tremendous job. I thought he put the Browns on the right track. And what I mean by that, he basically bought a second-round pick by taking on the contract of Brock Osweiler. I thought they had a phenomenal draft. The year he moved up and grabbed Jabril Peppers. I mean, I can sit here and go over the moves that Sashi Brown made. I thought he had set the Cleveland Browns up. In fact, if you go back to his time in Cleveland, I don't think the Browns today, and it's an exciting team, right? They have put together an exciting offensive squad that people are going to want to watch, and it's been a while since we've been able to say that. I don't believe it happens without Sashi Brown's time in Cleveland. So I envision Sashi being a football guy. Well, now he has landed a job with the Wizards front office. Strange twist, isn't it? Hired as senior vice president, and he is going to work with and in support of Tommy Shepard, their senior president and general manager. That's according to NBC Sports. The report said that Brown and Shepard will run separate groups under a new umbrella called the Monumental Basketball. I like it because, again, I'm curious. Anytime somebody can make the move from the highest level of the front office in the NFL And again, I think it was a success. I thought Tsatchi did great things. I'm curious to see what he does with Washington. Now, apparently, the first news and notes, the first order would be to get Bradley Beal locked up long term. Is this the right move? I don't know, because I think you're going to have to move on from John Wall at some point in time. But Bradley Beal, to me, is a guy that you can build around. There's a reason why Bradley Beal has picked up so much attention. Tommy Shepard is going to offer Bradley Beal a 3-year, $111 million maximum contract extension when he becomes eligible on Friday. So if Bradley Beal wants that security, I would take it, because at the same token, if the Wizards want to move Bradley Beal, they'll move Bradley Beal at some point in time. I don't believe he finishes that 3-year extension in Washington, but he's going to get paid. He's only 26 years old, and he is about to be paid. He can sign that extension, and it will actually begin with the beginning of the 21-22 season. So still a little ways away, but he has until October 21st to sign that extension. I don't see Bradley Beal passing that up. It seems like a great offer for both sides of the equation. Now, if the Wizards can find a way to move on from that John Wall contract, I think they would be in business. Let's move over to Major League Baseball. We're going to talk a lot of baseball on the show today, so we'll take a look at the schedule of games. Coming up at 5 o'clock, it's a big one. The Boston Red Sox take on the Tampa Bay Rays. You can't bury a team with 62 games to go, but you can make life extremely difficult on the Boston Red Sox. That's what Tampa Bay could do if they could figure out a way to get a win in this series as they play host to the Red Sox. Start time for that game is at 5:05. The Rockies will travel to beat the Washington Nationals. Two teams that'll be interesting around the trade deadline. We get St. Louis at Pittsburgh at 5:05. 5:07, it's Cleveland taking on Toronto. 6 o'clock hour tonight, the Brewers will welcome in Cincinnati. We get Miami at the White Sox. The Astros will play host to Oakland. Love this series as well. The A's, to me, are one of the more intriguing teams in baseball that I can't get enough of. Every year I say the same thing about the A's. This is the best team that nobody's talking about. I mean, really, there are players on this team that avid baseball fans, good baseball fans, really don't know a whole lot about. This A's team is very, very entertaining, and I love this series tonight. Homer Bailey will take on Gerrit Cole on the mound as the A's are experimenting with Bailey, trying to add depth to that pitching rotation. The Yankees will travel to meet the Minnesota Twins at 6:10. 7:40 tonight, it's Baltimore at Arizona. 7:45, the Cubbies will take on the red-hot San Francisco Giants. And in the nightcap at 8:10, it's Texas and Seattle. We're going to break for just a moment. When we return, we'll go over the local sports front. Plus, former big league pitcher Bill Lasky will join us for a baseball conversation. That's straight ahead here on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball. Deep to left field. Way, way back. It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. And it is Monday, so of course we are going to talk Major League Baseball with a great friend of mine, great friend of the show, Bill Lasky, former Major League pitcher. Spent his time with the San Francisco Giants and now an analyst for the Giants as well as the Sacramento River Cats. Bill, as always, every Monday is a pleasure to get you on. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree, Jordan. It's been fun, and baseball's been, you know, really good out here in the West Coast right now, and the Giants are winning. So far, so good.
All right, Bill, I got to put you on the spot. Let's go back 2 months ago. You and I are talking on a Monday afternoon 2 months ago, so we're back on May 22nd. If I'd have told you the Giants would be 500 on July 22nd, what would you have said to me?
I would have said you're crazy. No way I saw this happening, Jordan. And what's been good about it, it's been a lot of young players. Mike Yastrzemski. I mean, there's so many. Slater, Dickerson, guys that you never even heard of, you know, and now are playing at the utmost high for this team. And even when you look in their rotation, you have Anderson, Beedy just throwing lights out. A team that, you know, you thought was going to be dead last are now tied for second place in the NL West.
You know, and Bill, you're a former player, and so I really want your perspective on this. The Giants have been in so many trade rumors. I mean, Madison Bumgarner, we could talk Dyson, we could talk Smith. I mean, there's so many guys that could be valuable assets to contending teams. Yet at the same time, the Giants are three games out of the wild card right now in the National League. So as a former player, when you go into a season and you know you're fighting an uphill battle, 100 games into a baseball season, how irritated would you be with the front office if you were a player on this team that stays put while they move a blockbuster deal and a player that could help you get over that hump?
You know, Jordan, it's real difficult because you're in that locker room. You're living with these guys daily. They're 50-50 with 62 games left. Yes, they're playing extremely great baseball since the All-Star break. But what do you have if you do go into wild card? You play one game, and then you have to play the Dodgers in a five-game series. Sure, it's the Dodgers, and it's a rivalry. But I look at the second half. I look at Washington, St. Louis, Atlanta, Chicago Cubs. They play three here. Then they go to Chicago. They play Boston in Boston. The uphill battle is going to be real difficult. And if you keep all these pieces, a Bumgarner, a Will Smith, both free agents at the end of the year, what do you get in return? So now it's a 50-50 scale. What do you do if you're Farham Zeidi? What do you get if you go out and get them? If you hold till the last day and you don't get anything, then you're stuck with these guys. You're not really stuck with them, but then you give them qualifying offers, and then you turn into a Keuchel and you know, all the other ones that have to wait out till the compensation draft falls. So it's a tough decision because both these pitchers, Will Smith and Bumgarner, could get you some ample prospects, no doubt. So how long do you wait? Bumgarner's throwing tomorrow. That could be his last start in a Giants uniform. Or if they don't, then they keep him. And then what do they do, sign him long-term? That's not what their plan is.
Bill, we can stick with a team in the NL West, and this is going to sound completely crazy, but I believe that the San Diego Padres falling off, and they have fallen off. I mean, they were a fun story at the beginning of the season. It's a young team, an exciting team, a lot of prospects. At the beginning of the year, we were talking about the youth and if they wanted to make a move for some veteran leadership. I mean, they have the assets to do it. The Padres have now lost 7 out of 10. They're 5 games under 500. And like I said, this is going to sound asinine, but for a franchise that has this much talented youth, is it a blessing in disguise that the Padres do not have to move any of this young talent at the deadline to try to find a veteran piece to put them over the top into the playoffs, knowing that, I mean, it's a huge uphill battle for the Padres at this point in time? Is that a blessing?
Yeah, I believe so, too, because, you know, like I've done, I've covered the River Cats, and that El Paso team is loaded with young talent. Urias is up now. A couple other people will be coming up. I think it's an opportunity for these Padres to see what they have and see if these players are capable of playing in the big leagues. I'm just surprised how fast they fell because, you know, they have a lot of talent. Of course, Tatis Jr. is dialed in. But I'm kind of scratching my head how fast they went. And are they going to have a manager's change? Is Green going to be one of the first ones to be let go? Is any of these managers let go the second half, or are they going to wait till the offseason to make changes?
Yeah, you know, I view the Padres in somewhat similar sense than the way I viewed the Braves over the last two seasons. The Braves last year, to me, they were a year ahead of schedule. I didn't expect that type of production. But you're always hesitant, right, to trade a couple of these budding prospects to get a veteran if you're in win-now mode. And the Brewers were criticized about 2 years ago for not making any moves. I mean, they were right there in a divisional race with the Cubs. They didn't do anything at the deadline. Sometimes I think it may even be better for a team like the Padres to suffer a little bit without trading any valuable prospects, knowing that even if you do bring in someone that helps you get over the hump, you're still not beating the Dodgers. You're still not getting past the Braves. And I think just this alleviates some of the pressure off that Padre front office.
I agree. And, you know, I parallel that with the Giants because I look at one-game wild card. So you're going to throw all these pieces that you could possibly trade away for some top-line prospects for a one-game wild card. And then in return, you might not get to that. You might not even get to the wild card. You might falter in August or in September. So I just think, you know, same thing with the Padres. I look at the Rockies. in Arizona, are they going to trade some pieces? Arizona, Robbie Ray, you look at Colorado, are they going to build some more pitchers on that staff, what they need? San Diego's got pieces to trade. I don't believe they are going to trade because I think they understand they're not going to chase anybody. So the NL West now turns into a probable four teams. Are they going to trade pieces? I don't believe they're going to trade to get better. I think they're going to trade to get prospects. Nobody's going to catch the Dodgers. The Dodgers are still extremely hot. I still think they're the team in the NL and in the LOL to get to the World Series. Braves could pick up a couple pieces. Of course, the Braves right now are talking about possibly getting Bumgarner. His name's been floating here. Milwaukee's going after Will Smith. Minnesota also frailing a little bit. Bumgarner's name's been thrown into that, too. A lot of ands and ifs, but it's going to be on Farham on what he wants and what other teams are going to give up.
Like me, Bill, I know you watch a lot of National League Baseball. So as we approach the deadline, who needs to be the bigger buyer? Is it the Nationals, the Brewers, the Cardinals, or the Phillies? Because I think when it comes down to it, that's your four-team chase for the wild card spot. The Brewers could still win the division. But I throw in, you know, St. Louis and Philly because the Phillies have played better baseball as of late. I think they're a half game back right now. Out of those four teams, Washington, Milwaukee, St. Louis, and Philly, who needs to be the biggest buyer?
I think Washington needs to build that bullpen. You and I have talked about how bad that bullpen's been. And, you know, Fernando Rodney's not really doing anything sensational for him. They're looking at Dyson here. I read a nice piece on rumors, and Washington said they want to get relievers that are under control or they're not free agents. Dyson fits that role out here. That was one of the names they brought up. Will Smith. Again, I keep talking about Brewers. Brewers are looking for bullpen help. It seems like all these teams you just mentioned need the bullpen. And as you know, the bullpen here in the Giants are so strong. So I just think I really believe the Brewers could get bullpen. I really believe St. Louis could add an arm or two. You're putting me on the spot. I really don't know. All four of those teams need help.
Well, a team that you mentioned as being the front runner, the Dodgers, right now there's issues there with Rich Hill. We don't know what type of Rich Hill is going to be coming back once we get to the postseason. If you take a look at the Dodger bullpen, it's been somewhat of a disaster. Joe Kelly finally seems to be finding his footing. Kenley Jansen finally looks to be finding his footing again. He had a little bit of a rough spell. If you're in the Dodgers front office, if you're Andrew Friedman, do you target relief pitching or are you more concerned with starters, Bill? And the reason I bring up the starters, because the Dodgers passed on Verlander. They went with Yu Darvish 2 years ago. That blew up in their face. The year before that, they passed on Chris Sale. He ends up going to Boston. Last year, that came back to bite him. If you're Andrew Friedman, are you more concerned about the bullpen or your starting rotation?
I go bullpen because I think in any kind of playoff, you can get three starters, quality starts from all three of them. The fourth line starter, you can do a bullpen by committee. I just think he needs a couple more relief arms in that bullpen. Kenley Jansen, sure, he's one of the best, but he's faltered a few times. I just think he has to build his bullpen. His bullpen, I just think he adds a couple more arms in there. I think he would be favorable in doing that.
Well, let's jump to the American League, Bill. We have to talk about the Central. I mean, the Minnesota Twins. You and I talked about the Twins, not in depth, but sporadically throughout the year. I mean, they were in complete control of the Central. All of a sudden, the Cleveland Indians, three games back, we have a race in the Central. The Twins have really fallen on some hard times.
They sure have. And, you know, the whole question at All-Star break was the Indians going to trade Trevor Bauer. And now the Cleveland Indian fans say you better not, because I think they do have a good shot. When you look at Cleveland and possibly the Oakland A's could be in that wild card game. The Oakland A's are playing really good baseball again. But, of course, Houston and the Yankees are your best in American League. I just think Minnesota's going to buy some players. I really do. I think they're going to look at a starter. I think they're going to look at a reliever, a possible stick for a DH. I think Minnesota is going to make some moves here this week.
You mentioned the Oakland A's, and there's an important series tonight, Boston and Tampa Bay. This is a series that is so important for that wild card race because I keep waiting for Tampa to fall off, yet they haven't. I know they trail the Yankees by 9 games, but they are right there in the wild card race. You can't bury a team with 62 games to go, but Bill, I'll tell you what, if the Rays could figure out a way to pick up a series win over Boston, they could do a lot of damage and really change the complexion of the AL wild card race.
100% agree. And I tell you what, I'm really happy that Tampa Bay is still up in that race with New York and Boston. And boy, head-to-head matches, it seems like they're always even when they come out of a two or three or four game series. It seems like they're just battling every game down to the last out. That's what's great about the AL East. Boston's playing better baseball. New York, again, another Yankee team that's looking for starting pitching, and Bumgarner's name was thrown into that. I keep throwing Bumgarner in every conversation because every day I open Twitter up or the news and Bumgarner's going somewhere else. So the Yankees, again, are looking for a frontline starter. I still think Tampa Bay's still strong enough to battle, but I think tonight's going to be a good series starting with Tampa Bay and Boston.
I would love to end by talking about the Oakland A's, the other team in the Bay Area, Bill, that we don't spend a whole lot of time chatting about, but it's the same conversation every year. You and I have been having these conversations for about 3 years now, and this is the best unknown team in the major leagues year in and year out. Nobody is sitting around a table or a coffee shop talking about Chris Davis or Stephen Piscotty or Matt Chapman or Marcus Semien. No one talks about these guys, but they're so entertaining.
They are, and I tell you what, people need to make notice of them. I mean, Bob Melvin does a spectacular job with the pieces he has to play and pitch, and watching them as well as the Giants here in the last couple of weeks, it's been entertaining baseball here in the Bay. I just don't falter. I think the Oakland A's will either add a piece, little pieces, and continue to battle, but they can't catch the Astros. The Houston Astros have just been playing spectacular baseball, and if they turn into the wild card race, it's going to be a good battle down the road. But Jordan, the A's and the Giants out here, it's been great to watch both of them, and let's see what happens here in the next week before we get to the trading deadline.
All right, last question before I let you go, Bill. I want to talk to you about Aaron Boone. He goes out, made a statement, definitely yelling at a rookie umpire, getting into his face, suffers a one-game suspension because of it. At this stage in the year, when you're the New York Yankees and you've won 64 games and you have outscored your opponents by 138 runs and you have a 9-game lead over the Tampa Bay Rays and an 11-game lead over the Boston Red Sox, is this simply Aaron Boone making sure his team doesn't get bored?
I don't know about bored. I think they realize that he's fighting for him. I watched that whole scenario of it. I watched, and listened to what he said. I thought it was one of the best manager tosses so far. Managers just aren't doing that anymore, and for him to be mic'd up during that was spectacular. He really just pretty much told that umpire, your zone is terrible, wake up, concentrate a little bit more. And I'm glad he did it, because some of those pitches were way out of the strike zone. We had a scenario here yesterday with Pilar being thrown out on some Ephus curveball that was way over his head, came back in his zone late, and he called a strike. Pilar got thrown out of the game. The strike zone, again, is the big question in baseball. We can talk about robots doing balls and strikes, but they have to fix that, and they got to fix this replay system. The replay system's taking too long, and we can go on that another day. But I just think right now, Jordan, baseball is being played so well in most of the markets. Sure, your lower-tier loss teams aren't, but baseball's back, and I'm looking for a great second half here. In the orange and black, of course, who I cover in the San Francisco Giants as well as the National League, as I love the National League. You know I do.
Definitely. I'm right there with you, Bill. Yeah, we could have a fun conversation in the future about robots and pitchers. Who better to talk about with that than you? Bill Lasky, former Major League pitcher. Always a pleasure to get you on the show, Bill. Please let the listeners know where they can find you.
You can pick me up at Twitter at Lasky19. Jump on KNBR podcast. We're doing Saturday shows, of course, and love talking to you, Jordan, and love having your listeners listen to baseball with you. You're the best, and let's do it again. See what happens here in the final week before the trade deadline.
It's exciting time for baseball. Bill, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you again.
All right, Jordan. Take care. Have a good day.
We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. In fact, when we return, I want to piggyback off of that conversation with Bill and talk about a couple of rule change proposals. One being robot umpires, as Bill just mentioned, and also the possibility of a batter stealing first. Huh? Yeah, we'll talk about that when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Here comes the comeback. The kid is back on track.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Let's talk baseball. Not even Major League Baseball, but baseball in general. For whatever reason, it seems like right now the Fed is trying to find ways to make the game more relatable to a wider scale audience. And I think Rob Manfred, commissioner for Major League Baseball, I think he's the one to blame for this. I don't get it. I mean, if you don't want to watch a game throughout 3 hours, don't watch the game for 3 hours. If you're bored with it on TV, don't watch it on TV. I still believe that baseball, they say it's America's pastime. I think that's as relevant as ever today. And I look at it from the perspective of you can take your family of four or five to a baseball game and it's not going to break you. Now, the same cannot be said for the NBA or the NFL. Can't even really be said for some colleges when you take a look at college football and basketball. So I think baseball is fine. I think going to a baseball game, there's nothing like it. It's amazing. And this time of the year with the trade deadline looming, I love baseball. This is so much fun right now. Yet, the Atlantic Baseball League, and if you're unfamiliar with the Atlantic League, that's fine. Don't worry about it. It's an independent circuit. And Major League Baseball has kind of tapped them to test a slew of new rules. And the rules are getting a little bit more extreme. So we will begin with one that I just can't stand, and that's the electronic strike zone. This really bugs me. And I want to have this conversation with Bill Lasky when we have a little bit more time because he is a former major league pitcher. But the first possible rule change is the electronic strike zone, which I hate because human error is part of the game. And I hate it. And if you're all for the electronic strike zone, why were you not all for the BCS? That would be my question. People hated the BCS, completely took the human element out of it. People complained about it all the time. And the BCS, I thought was fine. I thought for the most part it typically got it right. I thought the two best teams in college football typically played in the national championship. Computer didn't know who Nick Saban was. Computer didn't understand who Urban Meyer is. Computer didn't know that. I thought the BCS was fine. I had no problem with it. People hated the BCS. And I know when we talk about officials, people traditionally hate NBA referees. I get it. People traditionally hate NFL officials. I get that too. But it was terrible. Remember when we had the replacement officials? They're all pretty good. I think this is an overlooked aspect in sports. Professional referees are pretty good. I mean, things are moving so fast and there's so much that's going on. But you know what? You know what referees get talked about the least? Major League Baseball. How many umpires do you know by name? That's not the case in the NFL. You know plenty of NFL referees. Same in the NBA. You know who the referees are. You don't in Major League Baseball. I think for the most part, baseball gets it right. And strike zones, to me, that's part of the strategy. That's part of the strategy of baseball. Because as far as the electronic strike zone goes, you know how difficult that is for catchers to frame potential strikes on the corners? I mean, that's difficult to do. To me, it takes a little bit of the element out of it. I don't like it. I'm totally against it. Now, I will say this on the next rule. This one is different. This is a rule proposal that the Atlantic Baseball League is experimenting with that would allow a player to steal first base. And that's what I say. If you're a baseball purist, this sounds totally ridiculous. I actually don't hate this rule. I would be interested in watching a major league game, an exhibition game with this, you know, rule set. Forget the electronic strike zone. But let me explain to you, if you're saying, how could a player steal first? Every pitch is in play. Every pitch that is not caught in flight gives the batter an opportunity to run and steal first base. Think about that. All right, so you deliver a perfect strike right down the middle, right into the catcher's mitt. You can't steal first. You try to paint the corner, and it hits the plate and bounces into the catcher, you can steal first. You can drop your bat and run to first. Isn't that interesting? Now, again, this goes back to Rob Manfred wanting to make the game more entertaining. And my response to that, I sound like old man baseball, and that's fine. Don't watch the game. If you don't like it, stay out of it. Stay away from my game. And that's always been my thought process on it. Simple, old man baseball answer, get off my lawn. If you don't like it, don't watch. But the Atlantic League, who plays a 140-game season, have said that players could now attempt to take first on any pitch caught in flight. Okay, so the proposal was obviously met with some skepticism, rightfully so, especially from pitchers and catchers. Because like I said, it's difficult as it is to paint the corner, to frame pitches. That is very hard to do. So let me give you a scenario on how this happened. Saturday, the Blue Crabs were down 1-0 to the Lancaster Barnstormers in the bottom of the sixth inning. Starting pitcher was on fire, finally leaves the game. Reliever comes in, batter takes one strike, watched his next pitch. It was a wipeout slider all the way to the backstop, where it got lodged beneath the padding of the wall. Batter made a break for first, becomes a runner according to the new rule when he takes both feet out of the batter's box towards first base. He was standing on first base before the catcher could even retrieve the ball. He stole first base. And you can watch video of it. It's officially scored as a fielder's choice, which means he didn't get credit for an at bat, or he didn't get credit for a stolen base, which I hate. But the crowd in attendance loved it. They were all for it. In fact, he got a standing ovation. He was the first player to steal first. It's never happened. Four batters later, he scored the game-tying run in a routine fielder's choice ground out to shortstop. That team later piled on six more runs. They took a 7-2 win. League officials this week recognized Jimmy Paredes, I believe is the name, as the first player to steal first base during a game. And that was against the New Britain Bees on Friday. They didn't have it again on Saturday. That one was in the third inning with a runner on first. He struck out on a wild pitch for what would have been the second out, but he couldn't advance to first on a drop third strike because the base was occupied. Okay, but under the new rule, he became a runner and advanced to first safely, and the man in front of him moved to second. So that's how the rule changes. So it's interesting. I don't believe Major League Baseball is going to adapt any of these rules. I don't know why they would. To me, the game is fine. I love the game of baseball. Leave it the way it is. It's perfectly fine. But it is entertaining. And I guess from someone who isn't entertained by baseball on TV, maybe it would make TV baseball a little bit more entertaining. You go to a baseball game, you don't need rule changes to make it entertaining. I think it's fine the way it is. But it is the first rule change that I look at and say, eh, okay. All right. I hate the idea of going into extra innings and putting a runner aboard. I hate that. No. It's baseball. This one is interesting, and basically what it is, it's an extension of the third strike rule with the catcher dropping the ball. That's what it is. It's an extension of that rule. This one's interesting. And like I said, I want to get a player's perspective on this. And so within the next couple of weeks, we'll have to talk to Bill Lasky about it when things kind of slow down a little bit in Major League Baseball. It's interesting enough, though, to have a conversation about it, isn't it? We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios right here on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
With the sixth pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart.
Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish. Hard to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
Final segment on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. Travis, let's talk NBA basketball. We'll close out with some NBA talk. And I want to go back to a discussion that I had during the intro to the show and the idea of the Washington Wizards offering Bradley Beal the max contract. I love Sashi Brown coming aboard. I shouldn't say I love it. I'm interested in it. Anytime you take a guy from the NFL, move him to the NBA, that's interesting to me. I want to see how things translate.
Different dynamic.
I thought he was fine in Cleveland. I remember sitting on this show questioning why they fired him in the first place.
I thought he was building that roster in the right way as well. So
he stripped it down.
That's what you have to do. What Cleveland needed to do.
That's exactly what they needed to do. And the Browns are not in the spot they're in right now if it wasn't for Sashi. I just don't believe that they are. Bradley Beal, giving him a $111 million extension over 3 years. Is that the right move for the Washington Wizards, yay or nay?
I would say no, because they still have John Wall's contract on the books. You don't want two of those contracts. If you can move John Wall, sure.
You're not moving that
but
contract.
But you're not moving it. So no, I wouldn't do that.
You know, I think you have to take care of what you have right now in Bradley Beal, because he's a good ball player. Bradley Beal, to me, is one of those guys that people don't realize how good he is because of where he plays. And I think there's a couple of guys like that in the NBA. I think Anthony Davis was that way in New Orleans, and I think everyone's going to get to really see just how good he is. You know, I think there are players that come on in certain markets that wide-scale fans just don't recognize, and I think Beal is one of them. He was so sought after. There are so many teams that wanted Bradley Beal this last offseason.
I watched him at Florida. He was great at Florida.
He was awesome at Florida.
And Washington hit it with him. And yeah, a lot of people want Bradley Beal because he's a very good basketball player, but I just don't think Washington can lock up themselves money-wise with those two.
Well, I see what you're saying. My only argument to that...
Because John Wall is never going to be the same.
He's never going to be the same. And my only argument to what you're saying is you can't use John Wall as an excuse to get rid of an all-star player in Bradley Beal. That would be my only gripe with what you're saying. Now, with that being said, let me throw this at you. John Wall this season is going to make $38.1 million. 2020, he's going to make $41.2 million. 2021, he's going to make $44.5 million. And in 2022, he is going to make $47 million. That is a terrible contract, even worse than the Chris Paul deal, hands down. I don't even think it's close. Bradley Beal this upcoming season would make $27 million. The year after that, final year of his current contract, $28.7 million. I don't know how they would, if they would backload this deal, I don't know what they would do. But then he would basically bring in $37 million over the next 3 years. So 2021 and 2022, between John Wall and Bradley Beal, you're talking $82-83 million between two players.
How do you build a roster around that?
I don't know how you do.
You can't.
I don't.
That's why if I'm Washington,
you know, but
they have to strip it down at some point, because Bradley Beal alone is not going to get you anywhere.
Well, and looking at it past the 2020 season, when Bradley Beal's new contract would kick in, do you know how many players they could have under contract based off team options? How many players?
Like two or three?
Two. Bradley Beal and John Wall. That's it.
So there you go. So we'll see what he does. The John Wall contract's killer, though.
It's the worst contract in the NBA. It is.
By far.
And anyone that wants to take on, anyone that was looking into Bradley Beal, and I do believe the Wizards considered trading Bradley Beal. I do, because you'd be an idiot to say, whenever someone says a player is untouchable, that's bogus. It's wrong.
No one's untouchable.
Nobody's untouchable. And I mean that to you fantasy owners out there as well. Fantasy football is coming up. You don't have anyone on your team that's untouchable, because you don't know what offer you're going to get. Now, if the Wizards had an opportunity to move Bradley Beal and include the John Wall deal, I would have done it in 2 seconds. The problem is, not a lot of teams have enough cap space to bring in $65 million without giving up a large portion of their team that doesn't necessarily work in building a championship squad. So it kind of goes along the lines with what you're saying right now. You have over $80 million wrapped up between John Wall and Bradley Beal moving forward. Can you win with that? I don't think you can. I really don't think you can either.
You have to build a... If that's your goal long term, then you need to build around Bradley Beal, but somehow you have to rid yourself of the John Wall contract, which you're not going to do.
I don't think so.
Which you can't, because nobody wants to take it.
I'm saying it right now on the show. If they move John Wall, I will tell you that I will never view another contract as unmovable in any sport, be it football, basketball, baseball. If they move that John Wall contract with him coming off an Achilles injury, I will never say a contract is unmovable ever again.
Then they have the smartest GM, and whoever traded for him has the dumbest GM. That's what I'm going with.
Unless you get a whole lot in return. Going back to it, look, Sashi Brown, what he did in Cleveland, he had a lot of criticism for taking on Brock Osweiler's contract. Get a second-round pick out of it.
You
take out a bad contract if you get a slew of future assets, right? If you're a bottom feeder and you get a nice group of assets, yeah, you consider it. That's when you take on a contract like that. I don't think anyone's going to take it on with 3 years remaining on it.
No, the Lakers had to do that with Mozgov. You have to give up, and they gave up D'Angelo Russell, but they have to attach that to get rid of the Mozgov contract. So somehow, some way, you have to get rid of something, and you have to give up something back. Valuable.
I'm going to end with this. One of the top names out there in free agency, Dwight Howard, former Wizard. While we're talking about the Wizards, you're an NBA GM. You give Dwight Howard a chance. You signing Dwight Howard this offseason? You can get Dwight Howard. I'm going to throw a number out there. You can sign Dwight Howard for the mini-mid-level. For the mini-mid-level exception, you can sign Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard's a Hall of Fame type player, right? Can we agree that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame?
Oh, Dwight Howard's going to go into the Hall of Fame. If you don't think Dwight Howard's going to go into the Hall of Fame, for one, look at who's in the Basketball Hall of Fame, and two, take a look at his statistics. Yeah, he would be an extremely rare company.
Defensive player of the year.
If he didn't get in, yeah.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. I would take a chance.
He seems like he's matured.
Yeah, he's got to, because where he was very immature, and that's why he's bounced around from team to team, because of that immaturity. I would take a chance.
The Wizards are an interesting team. Really interesting team as far as the NBA is concerned. We are out of time on this edition of the show. It's always fun to be along with you. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We're out.